This is Phil Farrand. And I am driving home. I could not get my key in the ignition there for a minute. It's Thursday today. It's been a somewhat conflicted week. Work is fine. Everything's fine there. But this week, a coworker, about the same age as I am, was diagnosed with leukemia. And a particularly aggressive form of leukemia. So he had just not been feeling well for a couple of weeks, and they thought it was the flu, and then, you know, on Tuesday, he had been back in, but then he kind of had a little bit of a relapse, and so he was home for a couple of days, and then he had come back in on Tuesday, and he came by my office, since I work with him on some other projects, and he said, the doctor's office called, they want to see me today, and they want my wife to be there as well. I said, okay. I said, well, we'll be praying, and sure enough, they gave him not necessarily the news you want to hear. The doctor's office made immediate arrangements for him to head up to St. Louis to what's called Barnes Hospital. It's one of the big hospitals up there. And from what has been described to him, if they had waited for another couple of weeks, that it would have been all over. It's a particularly aggressive form of leukemia. So he's heading into 28 days of chemotherapy and 5 months of recovery. And I mean, it's, you know, so we've had him in our prayers, and we'll continue to pray for him. And, you know, it's obviously a big shock, and they're just taking it one day at a time. So, you know, it's a difficult thing. And he's a good man, well-loved in the office. So, you know, all of us are kind of, you know, sad to hear the news. But, you know, Jesus knows about all these things. So we'll take this one step at a time, and we'll see where this goes. We'll just keep praying for him. And so we'll go. His first name is Brad, by the way, if you're listening to this and you are so inclined to say a word of prayer for him. I'm sure he would appreciate it. I would appreciate it. He's a good man. He's a good man. Work is going fine. We're just trying to get some things lined out for the end of the year so that we're ready at the beginning of the year to be able to pull some data and show some stuff. That all seems to be going fine. I obviously may be picking up some additional tasks since Brad is going to be out for a while. And he was alongside me when we were building through the cash receipt systems that I worked on with him. And so, you know, there may need to be some filling in the gaps while he's convalescing. So, writing is going fine. I'm a few words down, but not too bad. This is the last week of the first sprint of book 10, so I need to knock down, I don't know, 750, maybe 1,000 words tonight, and then I'm heading into a normal weekend, and if I can't get that far tonight, then, you know, we'll just push a little harder over the weekend. So I fully expect that in the next 2 or 3 days here that I'll have 75,000 words down on book 10, and then we'll be ready to close that up for a month or so, and then I swing back on to do all the edits for book 9. The stuff is coming in from the beta readers, so that's good. Book 9 comes in, and I should have book 9 in production by mid-September or so, or mid-December or so, and then take a week off for Christmas, although I really don't take a week off. I mean, well, the family is here, all the family's here for this particular Christmas. Our kids swap off one Christmas with us and Thanksgiving with Alan's parents, and then we swap it every year to where the Thanksgiving is with us and the Christmas is with Alan's parents. And this particular year, they're here with us, so, you know, we plan to play a bunch of games and go do some stuff and just, you know, have a nice Christmas holiday together, and I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be fabulous. And Elf Day is coming up. It'll be the Friday before Christmas, which is the 21st, so that'll be fun. That's always fun. And that will kind of be the official start of my Christmas vacation, will be Elf Day. So it'll be fun. Actually, it'll probably turn into Elf Weekend, because I'll probably do it Friday and then Saturday as well, because there's some people I can't see on Friday that like to see the outfits, so, you know, I'll probably get it back on, head back to Walmart, head back to a couple other people to say hey, et cetera, et cetera. So all is well. All is well. Jesus is kind. Things are good. They're just good. So God'll take care of all the things that need to be taken care of, and it'll be okay. We did go ahead and get my wife health insurance through the healthcare.gov, and I'm going to be able to keep my health insurance, and so we're coming in somewhere around $1,700 a month for health insurance, and that's high deductibles. I was talking to a friend this week, and he was just shaking his head, and I said, no, I said, you don't understand. I am happy to pay that. I said, I've just got to get through the next 3 years and get my wife moved on to Medicare in 3 years, and then I move into Medicare like a year and a half after that, and so we'll just limp through. It's gonna be okay, and I'm just grateful to be able to get health insurance, because, you know, the alternatives are not good. My wife, I think I mentioned, my wife had a little episode in Las Vegas. We finally got the bills in for that stuff. And 3 or 4 hours in the emergency room, $17,000. She came home. They wanted to do a stress test, $7,000 for 3 or 4 hours worth of stuff. I mean, you know, you cannot maintain any financial integrity with those kinds of numbers if you don't have health insurance. So you have to pay the piper. And I was talking to a friend, I think it was last Friday or Saturday, I was having breakfast with a friend, and we were talking about health insurance and talking about health care and that kind of stuff. And I made the comment to him that, man, I just don't, you know, I don't know until we kind of get to a single payer system, something like that, how in the world this could keep going. And he had heard something Jordan Peterson said, which made a lot of sense to me as well. Jordan Peterson said, you have to understand all of the innovation, or a large portion of the innovation in healthcare services is happening in the United States. And the reason that it's happening in the United States is that it is, for the most part, a capitalist system, and people can benefit from greed and wanting to invent something that will solve problems. You know, Jordan Peterson was saying, if you knock that out and you go to some kind of a socialist single-payer system like there is in the rest of the world, the people who are doing the medical innovations, what motivation do they have anymore for doing it? So you really need some kind of capitalist system to keep the wheels of innovation running. And, you know, it's a difficult, difficult, difficult problem. So, anyways, you know, it's interesting, but we take it one step at a time, and Jesus is kind, and he's good, and everything will be fine. Today, I come across this talk, this TED Talk, several months ago now, and I thought, oh, I gotta bookmark that thing, and then do it at some point, and then I never got it bookmarked. But it came to mind, we'll say Jesus brought it to mind, this week. And I thought, oh yeah, I was going to do a podcast on that. So I dug around last night, found it, and pulled it out, and pulled off a transcription on it. The reason that I found it so interesting is after I had done that podcast on luck, I had done a podcast on luck and talking about privilege and all that kind of stuff. So after I had done that, you know, the whole gist of that was, is you just don't understand how lucky you are in your situation, and you should be more grateful for the luck that you've had. And, you know, a lot of people aren't as lucky as you are, and luck, 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 luck. And that's true. That's true. I think the important thing in life is not necessarily how much luck you've had, but understanding that you did start with a certain set of talents. You started with a certain set of blessings. You started with a certain set of disciplines. And the most important thing, as far as I'm concerned, is what you did with those. I mean, I certainly have been blessed to have started with a lot of things, but what I have tried to do is take those blessings, that intelligence, that discipline, that upbringing that God has given me, and do something with it. Try to make the world a little happier place. Try to bring some value into the world. Try to make people's work lives a little easier. Try to write some things that will help people think maybe about their lives and maybe help them think about where they are and where they'd like to be and what's possible and those things. I feel like I have done something with what I have been given. I recognize that I've been given a lot, but I feel like I have done something with that and that I will continue to do things with it. And so, yes, I have had a lot of luck, but I have also taken what I have been given and used it profitably. The parable of the talents, if it teaches us anything, it teaches us that one was given 10 and one was given 5 and one was given 1. And the point is really not how much you were given. The point is, what have you done with it? So we can talk about luck all day, but the fact is that life is not equitably distributed. And I grew up in a country where people had a whole lot less, quote-unquote, luck as I have had. And yet, I knew many that I considered very successful. They were happy in life. They were kind. They were generous. They enjoyed life. They moved forward. They were hospitable, gentle people. So anyways, in that all of that discussion about luck, I then came across this TED Talk, and the name of the TED Talk was The Little Risks You Can Take to Increase Your Luck. I thought, oh, here we go. Let's watch this. This was by Tina Seelig, I think is her name, S-E-E-L-I-G. Oh, you know, oh, rats. Okay, hold on. Just a second. We got a couple of problems here. We've got two calves that are out. My neighbor raises... this is really awkward. My neighbor raises Scottish Highlander cows. And they're small. And they have a tendency to get out from underneath his fence onto the road. So I'm going to pause this a minute. And then I'm going to go try to get the cows back in. And I'll be back. Okay, I got one of them back in, but the other one just runs up the lane. He's smart enough to get out, but he's not smart enough to get back in. So I'm going to just see if I can nudge him in. Yeah, go on. Go in. Down underneath. You can do it. No, he's going the wrong direction. Okay. Go! Okay, hold it. I'm going to pause this again. One moment. Okay, well, I've got the little white calf. He wouldn't go back under the fence, but at least I got him back up the driveway. And I've texted them, and hopefully they'll be able to come out and get him and get him inside. At least he's away from the road. So anyways, she was talking about the little risk you can take to increase your luck. So she said in her talk that she'd spent 2 decades observing what makes people luckier than others. Trying to help people increase their luck, which seems like an odd thing to be able to do. She said, I teach entrepreneurship, and we all know that most new ventures fail, and innovators and entrepreneurs need all the luck, quote unquote, they can get. She defines luck as success or failure apparently caused by chance. And then she clarifies. She says, apparently, that's the operative word. It looks like it's chance because we rarely see all the levers that come into play. So she talked about the way she does training things. One of the things she does is she has people come up. She forms people into groups. And then she has each group come up with like a great idea for a restaurant and the worst idea for a restaurant. Like, we'll serve cockroach. I just lost the... It's been a long week. Cockroach sushi. You know, just stuff like it. We'll set up a restaurant in a garbage dump, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So after they come up with these great ideas and these terrible ideas, she collects them all, and then she throws away all the great ideas, and she redistributes the bad ideas to the groups and says, okay, you've got 3 minutes. Come up with a way to make this work. And so they rack their brain, they come up with ways, and, you know, they blah, 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 blah. So that's one way to, you know, help with your luck, per se. But she was talking about how... what she was trying to teach them in that is how to kind of take risks, how to be willing to take a bad hand that you've been given and just try stuff. So she was saying that, for instance, she was on an airplane ride and she was going to Ecuador, and she said, normally I would just put on my headphones, go to sleep, wake up and do some work, but I decided to take a little risk and I started a conversation with the man sitting next to me. But I introduced myself. I learned that he was a publisher, and we ended up having a fascinating conversation. I learned all about the future of the publishing industry. So that's 3/4 of the way through the flight. And then she said, I decided to take another risk, and I opened my laptop. I shared with him a book proposal that I was putting together for something I was doing in my class. He was very polite. He read it, and he said, you know what, Tina? He said, this isn't right for us, but thank you so much for sharing. If it's okay, And she said, that's okay. You know, that risk didn't work out. I shut my laptop. She said, at the end of the flight, we exchanged contact information. She said, a couple of months later, I reached out to him and said, Mark, would you like to come to my class? I'm doing a project on reinventing the book, The Future of Publishing. And he said, great, I'd love to come. So he comes to my class. We had a great experience. A few months later, I wrote him again. This time, sent him a bunch of video clips from another project my students had done. He was so intrigued by one of the projects the students had done, he thought there might be a book in it, and he said he wanted to meet with those students now. She said, I have to tell you, I was a little bit hurt that he wanted to do a book with my students, but not with me, but that's okay. She said, I'm all right, so I invited him to come down, and he and his colleagues came to Stanford and met with those students, and afterwards we had lunch together, and one of his editors said to me, hey, have you ever considered writing a book? She said, I said, funny you should ask. And I pulled out the exact same proposal that I showed his boss a year earlier. Within 2 weeks, I had a contract. Within 2 years, the book had sold over 1 million copies around the world. Now, she said, you might say, oh, you're so lucky. But of course, I was lucky, but that luck was from a series of small risks I took, starting out with saying hello to a man on a plane. Okay, so I don't really consider this luck, but that's okay if she wants to use the word luck. I'll tell you what I consider it when we all get done, and you all can probably imagine what I consider it since I only have one hammer in life. So she said, the second thing you want to do, so the first thing is take risks. The second thing you want to do is to change your relationship with other people You need to understand that everyone who helps you on your journey is playing a huge role in getting you to your goals. And if you don't show appreciation, not only are you not closing the loop, but you're missing opportunity. So she said there's three fellowship programs at Stanford, and she said they're very competitive to get into. And she said, I send out the letters to the students who don't get in. And she said, you know, I can always kind of tell what kind of people they are by the response they get back. You know, some rail about the fact they didn't get it. She said, about 7 years ago, a young man, Brian, sent me a beautiful note after he had been rejected, saying, I know I've been rejected from this program twice, but I want to thank you for the opportunity. I learned so much through the process of applying. She said, I was so taken by the graciousness of his message that I invited him to come and meet me. And we spent some time chatting and we cooked up an idea for an independent project together. He was on the football at Stanford and he decided to do a project on looking at leadership in that context. We got to know each other incredibly well through the quarter and he took the project. And when you start working on an independent study, and it turned into a company called Play for Tomorrow, where he teaches kids from disadvantaged backgrounds how to essentially craft the lives they dream to live now. The most important thing about this story is that we both ended up catching the winds of luck as a result of his thank you note, but it was winds we didn't expect to catch. So she says what she does is every person throughout the day that she meets and interacts with, that at the end of the day, she just sits down real quick and dashes off thank you notes and says, hey, thanks for meeting with me today. Really appreciate it. So first thing was take risks. Second thing was change your relationship to the people around you to where you express your gratitude. She said third, you want to change your relationship with ideas. She said, most people look at new ideas that come their way and they judge them. That's a great idea or that's a terrible idea, but it's actually much more nuanced. Ideas are neither good or bad, and in fact, the seeds of terrible ideas are often something truly remarkable. And that's, oh, I got this story out of place. That's where they did the thing with the restaurant. And she said, it's really fascinating how people can do that. She said they all started out as crazy ideas, and then once they began to pitch them to each other, something comes out of it. And so she concluded by saying, if you're willing to take some risks, if you're willing to go out there and really show appreciation, if you're, you know, really to really look at the ideas, even if they're crazy, through the lens of possibilities, you build a much bigger sail to catch the winds of luck. And, you know, as I said, I don't really consider this luck. I consider this more that there are two gates. There's a gate that leads to life, and there's a gate that leads to destruction. And it doesn't have to be massive destruction. It can be little tiny destructions in our lives, just missed opportunities, you know, unkind words that we say, things that offend people when we weren't intending to and we're not really paying attention. Things where you ignore the person that you're walking down beside the hall with. There can just be all kinds of these little things. And yet they set a tone and a tenor around you. And that has consequences that roll out. And conversely, if you're gentle and kind and try to be as patient as you can be, try to explain things, try to take responsibility when you've messed something up. I messed something up today. I answered a question and I was busy hurrying through it and I didn't investigate as much as I could and that just caused more confusion. And so I immediately apologized and said, no, this is, sorry, I gave you the wrong answer. Here's the right answer. that stuff happens, but you know, all three of these things that she's talking about, take more risks. Okay, what is that? Well, that is the flesh trying to tell you not to take the risk, trying to make you afraid. And it's the spirit that says, yeah, try it, see what happens. Show more gratitude to people. Taking people for granted is flesh. Showing gratitude to people is spirit. And not rejecting ideas out of hand, same thing. Flesh versus spirit. You know, a couple of weeks ago when we were trying to find that solution to that problem, and the flesh was just, you're not going to find a solution. This is dumb. There's nothing you can do here. It's way down in the controls. There's nothing you can do. Nothing you can do. Nothing you can do. Okay, if I had listened to that, I would have just said, yeah, buddy, I don't know what to tell you, and we'd have been done. But I just kept hanging in there with it long enough that suddenly I got a flash of an idea, and, you know, that was a thing that allowed us to get something that we could kludge together and actually make work. So, yay. So we can call these things luck if we want to. You know, if that's the word that needs to be used in this day and age so that no one feels bad, that's fine. But the fact is, when you try to move towards the spirit, when you try to make decisions, create actions that are wrapped in spirit as opposed to being wrapped in flesh, there's a synergy that starts happening. And you start getting more ideas. You're in the right place at the right time. Things are moving forward. I've been working on these service increments and service awards now for weeks. And there have been a couple of times when I thought, man, I'm putting a lot of time in this. Is this the right thing? Are we in the right place? What I didn't know is that the man who has been handling service increments, he is leaving. He's retiring in December. And this is going to be the first year they're going to have to do it without him in a long time. And the head of department head that I've been working with, she looked at me a couple of days ago and she said, you know, this is really good we're doing this right now. She said, because this is going to be the first time that we're going to do it without him. And I just thought, well, there you go. You know, I didn't know, I didn't have that piece, but I knew that I just had an urgency of, yeah, you should really try to get this done. So, you know, it's fun. And if we can listen, if we can listen and pay attention to those things, and if we can not just take the easy path, but make our best attempt to do things in spirit, even if they're just little things that we don't think will make any difference, I've been amazed how some of those little things can cascade out. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. I was going to say some other things, but you know what? This is already long. So just live in the spirit. Live in the spirit. Listen to Jesus. He'll give you ideas. Oh, I know. I there was one other thing I wanted to. It was funny this week. I think it was this week. Fun stuff. Fun stuff this week. Let me just check real quick to see if it actually was this week. I'm sure it was this week. So after last week, I'm puttering along. Everything's great, great, great. Okay, good. And I'm downstairs writing. I think it was like on Saturday. I was downstairs writing and everything was fine. And all of a sudden I get this text from my son-in-law. This was on Friday. And he says, do you still have the key to our safety deposit box? And I'm just like blank. I am completely blank. I wrote back and went, did I have that? Let me look around. And I did find one key, but I didn't think it was the right one. And so I said, well, I'll look around. And so I looked for a while. And then finally, I just, you know, did what I should have done from the beginning. And I just said, oh, dear Jesus, what in the world did I do with that key? Do I have that key? What did I do with that key? And it was so funny because a lot of times when I pray that prayer, then this image will pop into my head and that's where it'll be. Okay, fine, we'll go do that. This time, a question popped in my head. Well, where do you think you would put that? And I said, well, where do I think I would put that? And, It was no more than a few seconds that I thought, you know, if you were behaving like you normally behave, what you would have done is you would have put that in the fire safe. And just as I thought that, this image flashed into my mind of an envelope that had safety deposit key written on the outside of it. I know Moore had that memory in my head from, I was completely blank. I didn't have it. But as soon as I thought, where would I put that? And then it was like, well, maybe it's the fire safe. Then boom, I get this image in my head. So I trundle upstairs, pull the fire safe out. I get into the fire safe, start going through it. Sure enough, there's a number 10 envelope in there and has clearly written on it, Liz and Alan's safety deposit key. It's like, hey, there it is. But it was just so interesting that Jesus that time, you know, didn't tell me where it was. He suggested that I already knew where it was because I had been diligent to begin with. I had been, as we say, kind to my future self. It's fun stuff. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.